This episode is brought to you by Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express Card. And we here on Savor are what you might call food explorers. It has been our actual job to go to cool places and eat like a lot of the food there.
And then talk about it.
And then talk about it into these microphones, which is a crazy dream job.
Yes.
Well, if you're like us and willing to travel to seek out new foods to try, you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. It's for people like us who are in search of the next food adventure. If you travel, you know. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about macaroni and cheese.
Yes, I love mac and cheese. Many of you have recommended this one, most recently Meredith, but I know a bunch of you
over
have.
Over the years, it's been legion, the requests for this episode.
The mac and cheese has been legion. yes, and it is one of my very favorite comfort foods, which is appropriate because, Lauren, my quarantine anniversary is coming up March 13th.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's right. And I have a box of mac and cheese set aside.
Oh.
Yes.
That's a little bit weird, but beautiful.
I feel that's, yes, I will take that. So growing up, my siblings and I each had a favorite type of mac and cheese, which cracks me up. Like, it was all the Kraft mac and cheese, but I liked the shells, and my little brother liked shapes. He thought the cheese got in the crevices more.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my older brother was a classic elbow macaroni and cheese type.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It just cracks me up because they're essentially the same, and it's kind of just how your cheese is getting coated, I feel.
No, but that's an important part of the texture. So
it is.
You know.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you can appreciate this. And my mom used to make, I know a lot of you will think this is blasphemous, but she used to make a fancy summer mac and cheese, and it had
sorry, fancy summer mac and cheese.
It was a summer.
Yeah, please continue. I need to know.
Yes, so it was kind of like those spiralized elbow pasta, fancy.
Okay.
Zucchini, squash, tomatoes, onions, and spicy peppers.
Oh, wow. But
so
like
good.
With like the Kraft packet or like was it made with a different cheese sauce?
I believe it was Velveeta.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. That was a good day whenever she made that.
Yeah.
And those single serving mac and cheese cups, those were a staple of my college years. Mm-hmm. That and ramen, which I've through researching this, I've learned is very common in the United States college experience.
Yeah, yeah. Those I was just out of college when they debuted those cups, but for sure ramen was a staple of my diet.
Mm. Which I still love. I still love ramen.
Oh yeah. Oh God, I feel so lucky that that I didn't have mac and cheese cups available to me.
Yeah. And I really strongly remember how mac and cheese was the first thing I was able to stomach after I had the swine flu. I remember this so viscerally. And it was the box stuff, but it was so warm. It was so savory. It was so comforting. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious. And also twice when I was sort of homesick and living abroad, in two separate instances, a friend made me what they called an American dinner, which included things like peanut butter, pizza, spaghetti, and mac and cheese. Yes.
I am still delighted by this every time I hear about it. Like, I'm very confused, but very delighted.
Yes. I love that spaghetti and pizza, as we've talked about, like, the origin is not so American, but
no.
Like, that's
no.
What both these people thought. And, you know, I just got to put it in here. It always bums me out. In the film Home Alone,
okay,
when Kevin makes the mac and cheese and then doesn't get to eat it, he's so meticulous in his planning of his traps. He's got his well-drawn-out maps. And then he knows they're coming at 9 p.m. and he puts the mac and cheese down right at 9. What? You've got to plan around your mac and cheese better than that. I'm sorry.
Don't treat it like an afterthought, Kevin. Jeez.
Come on, Kevin. He said a prayer over it. He had his glass of milk.
Yeah. You know?
I'm getting angry.
This is not a detail that I recall from the Home Alone film, but I am glad that you have brought it to light.
It is a travesty, and it's not talked about enough.
I think we can all learn something here. Prioritize yourself. I mean, yes, creating deadly traps for harmless burglars.
Yes,
but also make sure you're
got self care.
Yeah, you got to feed yourself.
Mac and cheese.
Yeah.
And he went to a lot of trouble to get that mac and cheese. All right. Anyway.
Yeah. Mac and cheese is also one of my very favorite foods. It's something that if I'm like, and this is like not to like bring the party down, but like I have days sometimes when I'm like, ugh, I can't eat food. Why? All the time, every day, more than once a day, do we have to eat food? I'm a food podcaster. I know. It's ridiculous, but I just get so in my head and sad that I'm just like, I don't want to eat. But I can usually trick myself into eating mac and cheese. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I try not to do this. It is something I recognize in myself where I get annoyed with picky people. I know that's a problem of mine. But if people, like, I have a good friend and she told me she doesn't care for mac and cheese. She didn't say she didn't like it. She just said she didn't care for it. And like, I had to tamp down on the immediate like anger I felt at that. And I was like, I stepped back. What?
You took it personally.
I did. And my dad always used to say, don't tip. Don't take it personally. But I did. I did. We were at a food event where you share dishes. So it was kind of we were compromising.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, see, you know, then it is personal.
Yeah, that's why I don't think I would have been as shaken otherwise. But I was like, wait, we're not going to. I just assumed that was an automatic.
Yeah.
The mac and cheese.
Right. Sure. Of course.
Yes.
Well, when in the incredible future we are able to hang out at the kind of event where we have to share dishes again, I promise, Annie, I will always be your backup on the mac and cheese.
Yes. Mac and cheese backup. And we've talked around mac and cheese and craft specifically a lot. Some episodes that come to mind are our 50 Shapes of Pasta episode and our cheddar episode, processed cheese, and queso. But today, we are not talking about those things.
Yeah, plenty in the backlog if you want to get into it. But this brings us to our question.
Yes, mac and cheese. What is it?
Well, mac and cheese is a dish made up of a pasta in a cheese sauce, served warm. The pasta can vary, the cheese sauce can vary, the cooking methods can vary. I would say that there are two kind of like base varietals of mac and cheese. You've got the type that you make on the stovetop or in the microwave from a package that contains dried noodles and a packet of like cheese sauce or cheese sauce starter. And then you have the second type that you make on the stovetop and or in the oven by cooking noodles and making your own cheese sauce. And there can be overlap. There's a little bit of a genetic confusion, I would say, in between these. For sure, like the mac and cheese that my dad made for dinner when I was a kid was not prepackaged, but it was like he would just like make rotini and take like a jar of Cheese Whiz, like pasteurized processed cheese food product, and like just scoop the Cheese Whiz onto the cooked pasta. Like maybe some butter on there to like help cohese the sauce, but yeah, that was it.
Wow. Cheese Whiz.
Cheese Whiz. Yeah, that was his preferred brand over like a block of Velveeta or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
not the kind that comes like in a spray can. It wasn't like a spray can of Cheese Whiz. That's probably what you're thinking of.
Yes,
yeah,
I am.
It was analogous to a block of Velveeta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
If you are making, however, the cheese sauce from scratch, there are, I mean, any number of ways to accomplish that, but the sort of traditional is by making a Mornay sauce, which is the French way of saying a thick, creamy cheese sauce. So you start by making a roux, which is a flour plus fat, usually butter, cooked to start breaking down the flour. Then you add milk to make a bechamel, which is nice and creamy, and then add cheese to make it a Mornay, which is thicker and richer. And as we've talked about in nachos and queso, achieving a truly smooth incorporated cheese sauce can be difficult because many cheeses don't melt completely evenly, but rather the fats and the other stuff will separate out and make sauces go kind of oily and lumpy. So it's sort of a hack, as with nachos and queso. You can add some specialized ingredients that help emulsify the mixture, make it nice and even, like sodium citrate. And yeah, different recipes for mac and cheese may include some cheese added to the top, or like really like a lot of extra mixed into the sauce. You can do it with all kinds of cheeses. Mm-hmm. Hypothetically, I think orange cheddar is perhaps the one that we all think of when we think of mac and cheese. Although Mornay is usually a white sauce. But this brings us to my sub question to our question, which is, why is the packaged stuff often so violently orange?
Tell me why, Lauren.
Well, we discussed this in detail in our cheddar episode, but essentially the answer is cheese fraud in the 1600s.
Cheese fraud.
Dun dun.
Ah.
Yeah, and this happened because when you age a cheddar, it becomes yellow to orange over time because molecules of beta carotene are released over time. And that beta carotene gets in there when the cows that provided the milk that made the cheese were being fed fresh grass, or were grazing on fresh grass. I guess you don't like usually take a handful and feed it to a cow. At any rate, so this color was considered a mark of quality in cheddars in the 1600s in England. And all of a sudden, people figured out that they could dye their cheese yellow to make it look like it was higher quality.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of snowballed from there. Like, we still, I don't know. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Violently orange.
It cracks me up because in the weird, strange way of history, now, if I see like two mac and cheeses side by side, I'm going to assume, right or wrongly, that the fancier, nicer, higher quality one is the one that is not the orange color.
Right.
This is the flip.
Yeah.
Of why that all started.
Yeah, because you know that it's just food dye. If it's orange, there's no reason for it to be orange, but yeah.
There we are.
I have a kind of a bad reaction to annatto, which is one of the natural colorings that they use to make products that color orange. So I always go for the white cheddar ones. Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I love them. So good.
Oh, so good. So good. But yes, if you are not making your own sauce, these packages can come in a couple different sub-varieties. There's your powdered cheese variety, to which you generally have to add an ingredient or two at home. It's like usually recommended that you add some milk or some butter to kind of make the sauce all nice and creamy and come together. You can just use water, though, most of the time. And then you've got the type that come with usually these days little packets, little like a Mylar foil plastic packets of ready cheese. Cheese, yes, that you don't need to add anything to. Mm-hmm. It's so gooey. Oh, it's so good.
Yes.
It doesn't entirely taste like cheese, but it tastes like dreams.
It tastes like dreams. I don't even know what kind I picked out, so I'm excited to see.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was just, I was just trying to get out of there as quick as possible, so I'm gonna get it into the cart. I shall see. I'm sure it's good. Oh my gosh. Now I'm overwhelmed with intense curiosity and concern that it is not mac and cheese. Oh, dear.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'll face that after this podcast recording. Let's talk about the nutrition.
Okay. It highly depends on what varietal and ingredients you are talking about here. But, cheese is a calorie-dense food. That's rather the idea. Pasta tends to contain a lot of carbs without having a lot of fiber. And mac and cheese tends to be a heavily salted dish. Processed cheeses tend to be less calorie-dense, but also less nutrient-dense and usually a little bit even more saltier. I mean, mac and cheese is going to fill you up and help keep you going. I would say that if you're having a type made from unprocessed cheeses, homemade sauce probably, watch your serving size, eat a vegetable. And if you are having a processed cheese type, still watch your serving size and eat a vegetable, but also consider balancing with like a little bit of extra protein.
Oh, see, what I'm going to have to do, because I'm at the end of my grocery cycle. Is all I have left is the mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, and lima beans.
Oh, wow.
So that's my meal.
No, that honestly sounds great. I mean, that sounds like a terrific meal.
To me, it does. I think it's not what you would typically put together, perhaps, but it's going to work, and I'm excited.
I feel like there has to be like a Swanson's kids meal out there that has exactly those ingredients.
Oh, you're right. It is such a childish meal.
Yeah. I'm always really proud of myself when I trick myself into eating mac and cheese, and I also realize that I've got like frozen spinach or something.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, yes, I am an adult, almost, kind of, sort of.
See, there's spinach. Vegetable is happening.
We do have a whole bunch of numbers for you.
We do. Okay, so about 1 million boxes of Kraft macaroni and cheese are sold a day.
Yeah, and when you open that up to other brands aside from Kraft, including Kraft, it's 2 million boxes of mac and cheese a day in the United States alone.
Ooh.
Or probably more, because that number is from 2013.
And yes, demand for mac and cheese has risen with the pandemic. Somewhere around 35% in Canada, at least. And it is popular in Canada. Mm-hmm. I did not know this. Where it's called Kraft Dinner, or KD. So good. Canada accounts for about 24% of box macaroni sold a week. 24%. Oh. It's 1.7 million of 7 million per week. And that's 55% more than Americans. What?
Huh.
What?
Okay. Well, good job.
Maybe I'm not doing my part in this. Mm. If I have to eat more mac and cheese, I will. It is one of the top-selling grocery items in Canada. Also popular in the UK, where it's called macaroni cheese and or cheesy pasta.
And I love this because this is like, I got the same feeling reading that as I did when I realized, like, a few years after having originally picked up some of the Harry Potter books, that like, oh, that's where creepypasta comes from. Oh, spellotape is because they call it sellotape over there. Okay.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I hadn't picked up on that either.
There you go.
When we were first researching this, I say as if we were researching it together, but you know.
It was.
I was confused by the many articles that just called it macaroni cheese. And at first I thought it was a typo, but now
I see.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Also popular in Black Southern cuisine and traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And shapes. SpongeBob is the one that comes to my mind.
From my childhood, I'm like, I'm pretty sure there were Ninja Turtle shapes or something. That it seems likely. Right now, Kraft offers Paw Patrol shapes, unicorn shapes, and Frozen 2 shapes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have seen those. I'm so intrigued by the whole process. Like, do you have to make a whole machine?
It's probably a specific die for the machine because as we talked about in our pasta shape episode, and if any of y'all do listen to the Sporkful, or follow Dan Pashman on social media, he's doing this ongoing series about his quest to make his own pasta shape. And so he's got a lot of really great content out right now about, I just called it content, heck. That's really industry of me, I'm sorry. He's got a lot of great material out right now about how pasta is made and manufactured. The basics of how you get a pasta shape is that you make the dough and then you push it through this machine and cut it off through a shaped thing like Play-Doh, right? And mm-hmm. then you cut it off with a blade and that's your pasta shape. So, I imagine it's, you know, not free, but not too expensive.
Okay. I'd love to be the person who designed those. And it's like on your business card. Have you seen my work in the newest macaroni and cheese Frozen 2 shapes? That brings me to a philosophical question. Is it still macaroni and cheese if the pasta is no longer macaroni in shape?
And I was thinking about this when you were talking about add-ins to macaroni and cheese, because of course people add any number of things into macaroni and cheese, but sort of similar to my feelings about like, well, if you add more than like two ingredients to like a grilled cheese sandwich, it's no longer a grilled cheese sandwich. It's mm-hmm. a something else and cheese sandwich that has been grilled.
Right.
And I feel like Americans, especially, maybe it's everywhere, play fast and loose with the definition of mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah. All kinds of things. I made mac and cheese cups for our very own D&D sessions back when we had
those
them
in
person.
Yeah.
And they had, I think they had bacon and maybe mushrooms, and then they were topped with fresh Gruyere.
Oh, those were good.
They were good.
Man. I think it is still mac and cheese without the macaroni. I think that as we will get into on our history sections, the term macaroni itself has changed so much over the years and meant so many things. So
macaroni has transcended the macaroni.
It has.
Deep. And then, of course, Macaroni and Cheese Festivals really pushed the lines of this philosophical question. I have been mm-hmm. to one. It was a lot. It was delicious, but a lot.
Yeah, that sounds like...
I think there were 28 options.
Oh, my heck.
Yeah.
That's...
Yes, you can't see the face I'm making, but it's one of intense regret, but also pride.
Yeah, both of us just look kind of like worried.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. And there are entire mac and cheese restaurants. Yes, people have been playing fast and loose, and clearly people love mac and cheese and have loved it throughout time.
Yes, and we will get into that history, but first we are going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express Card. And we are what you might call food explorers. We are so lucky that a part of our job involves traveling and trying a lot of the food where we go to travel and then coming back here and telling all of you good listeners about it. And through that, we have discovered some amazing dishes.
Sure, yes. Like, I had never understood what poke really could be, and it is delightful.
It is stunningly good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which we had a lot of on our trip to Hawaii. Another thing from their passion fruit I now look for in literally every menu that I read. I'm like, yep, that one has passion fruit. Going for it.
And then all of the moles, and especially the green mole that you heard us talk about recently that we had
from
in Las Vegas.
In Vegas, yeah. Oh, or just steak basements.
Who doesn't love a steak basement?
Exactly. Well, if you are like us and you're willing to travel to seek out new foods to try, you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. It's for people who, like us, are in search of the next food adventure. If you travel, you know. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, as said at the top, see our cheese episodes for more context on this one, and especially cheese and cheese making.
Yes.
But in brief, cheese making has been around for thousands of years, possibly an accidental discovery, but certainly a helpful one in terms of increasing the shelf life of a protein product like dairy. Pasta, on the other hand, oh, people like to debate this one. But probably originated in either Japan or China in 3500 BCE and traveled with merchants on the Silk Road to the Middle East and Africa. It was probably introduced by merchants from these regions to Italy during the 7th century CE, and from there it spread throughout Europe. Separate episodes, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. In extreme brief.
In the extreme brief. The word macaroni is possibly thousands of years old, going back to when ancient Greeks established Neapolis in what is now modern-day Naples, sometime between 2000 and 1000 BCE. The locals there made a dish called macaria, which I really love the sound. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I love the sound of how I just pronounced it.
maybe more like macaria or
macaria.
Sure.
Well, that sounds like the macarena. That's a different vibe than macaria. Oh. But you're right. It could be. It does sound like a fantasy goddess. And it was potentially named after a Greek goddess.
Yeah.
It was a barley flour pasta cooked with water, however it was pronounced. It was later corrupted in Italian to mascheroni, probably. Again, kind of lost to history. Mm-hmm. But that word, in either case, for a long time meant pasta at large. It was kind of a catch-all. But okay, mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. The origins of macaroni and cheese are also a bit mysterious. Some historians suspect it originated in Northern Europe, that perhaps Swiss alpine herders were the originators of this dish, or the Swiss precursor to it called alpine herders macaroni, which was essentially elbow pasta tossed with the local cheese like Gruyere. And you can still get it to this day in Switzerland and Northern Europe. And to me, that does sound like mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
That's it. That's it right there.
Mm-hmm. Alpine herders needed to pack light, and dry pasta didn't weigh much. And they made the cheese themselves, resulting in this fortifying dish that I am imagining. I can't believe I've never had mac and cheese while hiking. But perfect for a cold and physically taxing environment.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm.
The first known recorded recipe for a macaroni and cheese dish dates back to 1769. It was from Elizabeth Raffald's book, The Experienced Housewife, with a sauce made of cheddar and bechamel, tossed with noodles and topped with toasted breadcrumbs and Parmesan. Or was it?
Oh.
Because it could have been earlier. Some sources point to a 13th century Italian recipe written in Latin calling for small 2-inch or 5-centimeter squares of sheet pasta, cooked in water and then covered with cheese, possibly grated Parmesan. There were two recipes in this book, in fact, macaroni Romaneschi and macaroni Siciliani. And just to note, the book that contained these recipes was published in the Italian-speaking area of Switzerland. So kind of maybe gives credence to that other theory. It seems to once again come down to how you define macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but cheese is good. Pasta is good.
Agreed.
People were probably combining it in various iterations in places where both of those things were available.
Indeed. If they were smart, they were. This book also had recipes for and methods for making hollow pasta, including wrapping dough around a stick. But these noodles were typically much longer than the short elbow macaroni that we think of. In 1861, Mrs. Beaton's Book of Household Management included a recipe for cooked, quote, pipe-shaped pasta topped with toasted Parmesan and or Cheshire cheese and breadcrumbs. Beaton claimed that macaroni was a, quote, favorite food of Italy and that they, quote, regard it as a staff of life.
Mm.
It said staff. I thought it was a typo and maybe stuff.
No, sure, like a staff of life, like it holds life up.
Oh, remember the kale scepter? If I got a kale scepter and a macaroni staff, and I get a,
I feel like we're designing like a suite of tarot at this point.
Ooh, I think we might be. Oh, interesting. Terrifying food tarot. Or powerful. Doesn't have to be terrifying. It could be both.
Sure.
Well, soon after Mrs. Beaton said this, Alexandre Dumas's 1873 work, Grand Dictionnaire de Cuisine, also claimed that the birthplace of macaroni and cheese was, in fact, Italy. He even went on to claim that Catherine de' Medici was responsible for introducing the dish to France and neighboring countries in the 1530s. However, Dumas himself was not a fan of macaroni and cheese, at least as the stories go. He allegedly called it long pipes of pity. Wow, we've had a lot of good, harsh disses on food in the most recent episodes. Long pipes of pity. And as the tale goes, he disliked this dish so much, he got in a fight with Italian composer Gioacchino Rossini, who composed the William Tell Overture. After he requested Rossini, a big proponent of macaroni and cheese, make the dish for Dumas, but then Dumas refused to eat it.
Wow.
That's a low blow.
That is.
That's petty.
Like, hey, would you make me this thing? I don't know if I like it. Would you make it for me? Not going to eat that. Not going to eat that.
Wow.
Jokes on you.
Mm-hmm. That is salty, Alexandre Dumas. Holy heck.
Yes. Salty. Pasta was certainly popular in Italy during the 17th and 18th centuries. Wheat was affordable, industrialization made pasta production easy, and pasta itself was filling and a good alternative to meat when meat was prohibited on various days for the church-going crowds for religious reasons. However, there are no records of hollow pastas in Naples in the 14th century. And from what I read, that's telling because they kept pretty good records about their pastas.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the Italian recipes for macaroni in the 1700s were a bit sweeter and spicier than what we'd expect these days, featuring ingredients like cinnamon, sugar, and rose water. Meanwhile, the dish in the Alps was far simpler, often just pasta, butter, cream, and cheese. Some 1731 documents from the archives of a Swiss abbey detailed people using a thread press machine to make hollow macaroni pasta. And an 1836 cookbook from that region included a recipe for macaroni that called for baking pasta with Parmesan or Swiss Emmental cheese. I didn't know how to look that up. I always said elemental. And then I realized that's not how it's spelled.
That's definitely not how it's spelled. It's probably not how it's pronounced.
Yes. Glad I checked. Switzerland's first cheese factory opened in 1838. According to some sources, the first known commercial production of elbow macaroni did take place in Switzerland in 1872. Now shifting... macaroni and cheese in America may have evolved from pasta casseroles served at New England church suppers, recipes brought over from England, until the Industrial Revolution made pasta making easier and cheaper. Dishes like this would have been, for the most part, reserved for the upper class.
Yeah, and the amount of milk and butter and cheese that you might put into a dish like this would also have been cost prohibitive before the Industrial Revolution.
Right. Thomas Jefferson, yes, that guy, gets a lot of credit for introducing mac and cheese to the U.S., which he definitely didn't. He did popularize it here after he brought the recipe back from one of his trips to France or possibly Italy or probably both, along with a pasta-making machine, which was necessary since yes, this pasta was not available in the U.S. on sort of this commercialized
or widely available. Sure, right, yeah.
Yeah. It was his enslaved chef, James Hemings, and other enslaved folks that cooked it, however. So he's like doubly doesn't deserve the credit.
Yeah.
In 1802, President Thomas Jefferson served macaroni and cheese at a state dinner. One attendee of this dinner was not impressed, describing, quote, a pie called macaroni, which appeared to be a rich crust filled with destrillions of onions or shallots, which I took it to be, tasted very strong and not agreeable.
Not agreeable.
Mm. Not agreeable.
Well, I will say that Mary Rudolph, who stepped in as the White House hostess after Jefferson's wife, Martha, passed away, did include later on when she wrote her cookbook, The Virginia Housewife, in 1924, a recipe for macaroni and Parmesan cheese. Which brings me to kind of like a side question here. Why all of this Parmesan in some of these recipes? Certainly in America, Parmesan was, and kind of still is, like a fancy imported cheese. So super, super classy, you know. Some of the first cheeses made in America by English colonists were cheddars, though. And cheddar would have been much more available.
So this is a mystery of history?
I haven't looked deep enough into the availability of different cheeses in America at the time. It's like right there. It just isn't okay. quite together yet, you know?
Another cheese hole for you, Lauren.
So many all the time.
All the time.
They never stop.
You've had multiple sub questions in this episode. I like it.
There's a lot to think about.
There is a lot to think about.
Many
and
side
we
quests.
We will one day return and think about it further. But meanwhile, mac and cheese was popular among enslaved peoples, particularly in the South. It was sometimes viewed as a celebration or weekend food. But as time went on and after the emancipation, it became an everyday food.
Mm-hmm.
Now, stepping back a bit, we talked about the origins of the macaroni in Yankee Doodle Dandy. We talked about it briefly in our Shapes of Pasta episode. But just to go over it real quick, because it is interesting. This song, this tune, was penned several years before the American Revolution. The first known reference took place in 1767, and music historians believe a British Army surgeon named Dr. Richard Shackburg wrote it, or at least part of it. Supposedly, it was meant to mock colonial soldiers who fought alongside the British, and also just to dig to American colonists at large for basically not being very cultured or rich. So macaroni in the song referred to this highly fashionable group of English youths in the 1760s and 70s. Think like show-stopping wigs and tight clothes and fancy pointed shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Very striking.
Very posh, yeah.
Yeah, very posh. They made a huge impact on fashion at the time, and apparently their favorite food was macaroni. Can't blame them for that. So people started calling them and their movement macaroni or macaroni eaters. So the diss in the song is it's not enough to stick a feather in your cap to be a macaroni.
Yeah.
It takes more.
Yeah, you can't just call anything macaroni.
Yeah, you can't fake that, Americans. See through false macaroni facade. Up until the opening of America's first cheese factory in 1851, cheese was made on small farms, typically by women, either a wife of the farmer or a cheese maid or an enslaved woman. But with industrialization, beginning with the opening of this very cheese factory, men largely took over the production of cheese in these industrial spaces, as often happens. Processed cheese was invented in 1911, essentially emulsified blended pasteurized cheese that drastically increased the shelf life, which made way for products like Kraft Singles, Velveeta, and eventually powdered mac and cheese sauce. This innovation was helpful in terms of feeding soldiers during war and for others who didn't have access to refrigeration.
Yeah, the U.S. military bought 25 million cans, quarter-pound cans, of Kraft processed cheese during World War I to ship out to soldiers.
Dang, dang, dang. And Americans went all in on this processed cheese to the point that American cheese to this day denotes processed cheese.
Yeah, which if you talk to any American cheese makers right. of cheese who live in America, they get kind of testy about this, and I can see why.
Yeah, I get it. And then in 1937, Kraft released their boxed macaroni and cheese. This was during the Great Depression, so the convenience and the 19 cents price really caught the national eye. It was cheap to make. It was easy to ship and to store. It was filling. It was delicious. And it was the first American product to use processed cheese. Within a year, 8 or 9 million boxes were sold.
And I couldn't quite track this down, but I'm nearly positive that these boxes would have come with small tins of cheese sauce.
Yeah.
Because the technology for plastics, for making the type of packets that we see today for the wet cheese sauces hadn't been invented yet. And we were still in a wet sauce stage. I don't know why that sounds so gross. I apologize.
Can you imagine if they redid, like, you know, the Jurassic period, the Cretaceous, if it's like dry sauce, wet sauce.
Dry sauce, wet sauce.
Oh, no. There's so many projects I want to take on after we do these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one. Listeners, get on it. You can do it. And this box mac and cheese, its popularity really grew during World War II when rationing limited availability of staples like dairy and meats.
Yeah, and World War II did also see the development of cheese powder for the first time, because processed cheese, although shelf-stable, was still heavy in this wet era. A branch of the Army called the Quartermaster Corps had been working with various public and private labs, especially Kraft, to dry and press cheese into a lightweight, nutritious, and tasty dust. Get the water out of there. It's a lot more lightweight. USDA dairy scientist George Sanders is credited with the first successful cheese powder in 1943. And I'm not totally positive when that powder would have made it into macaroni and cheese boxes. But maybe it was right away. I'm not sure. At any rate.
Sales of mac and cheese increased fivefold. By some accounts, 50 million boxes were sold in 1943 alone, or possibly 80 million boxes. I saw that number floated around. It was a lot of boxes.
Lots of boxes.
It helped that the company convinced the U.S. government to sell two boxes for one ration card.
Oh.
Yeah, smart. Products like this one also facilitated the ability of women to enter the workplace in higher numbers, these convenient, quick, easy meals. But I did want to put in here, I saw some really sassy international articles that were like, oh, those Americans can try to claim mac and cheese all they want with this state with Kraft, but they can't. And here's XYZ reasons why.
They're like, we're sorry. Have you been to Switzerland?
Yes, and it's like a really in-depth, they're like talking about the goats grazing the mountains. I'm like, wait, what? Okay.
In the 1950s, some brands sold cans of processed cheese as specifically macaroni cheese.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Kraft blue box of macaroni and cheese debuted in 1954. Before that, the box was mostly yellow. Spiral-shaped noodles came out in 1975 and Velveeta shells and cheese in 1984. And then the friendly, cheesy dinosaur mascot, Cheezosaurus Rex, debuted in 1991.
Oh, if y'all missed this, blessedly, for some reason, this is a bright orange bipedal dinosaur, and he's really into cheese. He's very excited about it. Mm-hmm. He, like, sings songs about it. Mm-hmm. He surfs on it because it was 1991, so you can surf on anything.
Yep. He was very active.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and he was real cool. He was real cool. His, like, tagline was, like, it's cool to be cheesy. I don't know if he had a voice. I can't remember.
I think he did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, or fortunately, the Kool-Aid Man is my go-to voice for 90s commercials.
Sure.
So that's what I hear. But I'm pretty sure he did have a voice.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. Because it was all like, it's the cheesiest.
Yeah.
I think is a line that he said.
Mm-hmm. And Lauren and I were discussing beforehand, he really could have only existed in this specific, like, been created, is better to say, this time. It's, I immediately was like, 90s, right?
It's extremely 1991, specifically, yes.
Yes. And apparently this was his legit theme song when he was introduced, when he was first introduced, yeah. So I'm not going to sing it, but macaroni and cheese, oh, the cheese, it may be phony, but that's real macaroni in the macaroni and cheese. So did they just, they were just like, yeah, that cheese is phony, but that mac, mac and cheese.
Yeah. We got one legit going for us. What's up?
Phony. Well, you know, they were just trying, I know, they were just trying to rhyme something with macaroni. Look, when I'm trying to come up with titles, I understand. You make certain compromises and sacrifices that you might not be proud of. But wow, they leaned all in to the phony macaroni and cheese. In later commercials, Cheezosaurus goes to Noodle Town, records a song called Cheese Me, and wins a Grammy made of cheese. And just wanted to say belated congrats on your win, Mr. Rex. Well deserved.
Yeah, yeah. When he first went gold, he was featured on the cover of the magazine Rockin' Roni. And congrats on that, too. It's something that many of us aspire to, and so few of us actually make it there. So I believe there were comic books. There in the commercial in which he won this cheese Grammy, like, he's like singing to a big audience of macaroni noodles.
Mm-hmm. I recall. Every now and then, Lauren, you have such a good delivery of things that you say something and I'm like, is this a joke? And then I'm like, what is real life? Rockaroni. I don't know. Maybe we're all in a mac and cheese commercial.
Maybe we are. It's you're welcome. I'm glad I make you doubt the very nature of existence.
Yes. It's good to keep me on my toes. Who knew Cheezosaurus Rex was going to give me such a perplexing crisis?
I feel like the existential crisis is right there in his smile. I feel like there is...
You're right. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I guess we need to do more research into that sometime. More horrifying, spiraling research.
Yes.
But
we must know what's up with Cheezosaurus Rex. But all right, that's for a later date.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if he has any connections to the Kool-Aid Man.
Oh.
But anyway. Yes. Let's talk about Kraft's Easy Mac Cups, those things that helped me get through college. Those launched in 2006.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And yeah, these are microwavable cups that it comes with a little... Does it come with a separate little powder packet that you have to open up and add in, or is it already all in there? I can't remember now. But anyway,
it's already all
there. You just add water, put it in the microwave.
Yeah.
Done.
Yes. I will say, not as good quality as the box, but it does the job.
It's very quick cooking macaroni, yes. So it's a little bit, it doesn't have the texture. It's not al dente, right. You know?
Oh, you gotta have your al dente mac and cheese. Kraft dropped the artificial yellow dye from their boxed mac and cheese mix, along with all artificial flavors and preservatives in 2015. They didn't tell anybody for about a year that they'd done this, and they called it, quote, the world's largest blind taste test.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, it was in the ingredients label,
right,
if you took the care to read that. But yeah, I do want to note here that the term artificial is kind of tricksy. It only means that a given ingredient is like human made using chemistry, as opposed to natural ingredients, which are derived from plant or animal or fungal or microbial, et cetera, sources. So an artificial flavor may be chemically identical to a natural flavor. Natural doesn't necessarily mean healthier or more environmentally friendly or otherwise better in any way, necessarily. Right. You unfortunately have to like look at every single case individually, which I understand is exhausting, but
yes,
that's often what food science is made of. Exhaustion. Joy and exhaustion. Speaking of, in 2017, the New York Times published this piece called "The Chemicals in Your Mac and Cheese," that caused a whole stir. It was reporting on a study that was put out by a bunch of advocacy groups. The study was not peer-reviewed or published in a journal, about this group of industrial compounds called phthalates, showing up in powdered cheese products. Phthalates, by the way, if you happen to want to Google more about this, is spelled in the most confusing way possible, which is P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E. And I had to just stop the podcast recording for a moment to go look up how the heck to say that, because that's not a combination of letters. What is that?
No.
Anyway, phthalates. Phthalates are used in manufacturing plastics. And when those plastics are used in the manufacture or packaging of food products, they can leach into those foods, especially foods that contain fats, like cheese, because phthalates latch on to fats. And these compounds are linked to hormone disruption, which isn't good. Europe has banned the use of most phthalates in making plastics that will come into contact with food. The U.S. has not. And I'm going to say that, like, well, okay, A, your mac and cheese is not the only problem. Like, any cheese product in the United States that has been through a manufacturing facility that uses plastics, yes, including, like, organic or natural or whatever products, may contain phthalates. B, I wouldn't say it's something to worry about too much. But it is definitely part of the case for choosing less processed foods when you can.
Yes. Yes. Well, perhaps not along those same lines. In 2020, Kraft Mac and Cheese held a promotion. I bet a lot of you remember this, announcing that the word dinner would be replaced with the word breakfast on limited edition boxes of their mac and cheese products. And they released these numbers. I can't remember, but it was like a quarter of people surveyed said they ate it for breakfast. And so they were trying to capitalize on that. You know, eat your mac and cheese when you want to eat it.
Yeah. But, yeah, you do you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I mean, that was definitely one of those headlines in 2020 that was like, all right, cool. Corporate America has given up just as much as the rest of us have. Breakfast, yeah, mac and cheese for breakfast. Whatever, that's fine. Yes. We're fine.
Everything's fine here now.
And speaking of kind of nihilistic marketing campaigns.
Excellent.
At the beginning of this year, 2021, Kraft launched this campaign involving pink-hued, candy-flavored mac and cheese. They made 1,000 boxes of this stuff. You know, like their normal mac and cheese, but also includes a candy flavor packet. And you could enter a drawing online to receive one, though I'm not sure why you would do that. Other than pure curiosity.
I feel like maybe I get the pink dye, but when I heard it was candied flavored, that was what made me stop. Like, okay, what?
Right. Right. Well, because it was kind of for Valentine's Day. And I was like, well, that's sort of cute. Like, sure. Like, why orange? Why not neon pink instead? That's fine. But then when I was like, wait a minute, like, why?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's certainly this year, as we've discussed, I feel like companies have kind of gone all out in odd promotional choices. Uh-huh. I can't remember which one, but it might have been the Panera Bread Bowl hands gloves.
Oh, huh.
One of my friends. No, it was the Ritz cracker. It was the huge Ritz cracker that was the cheese board.
Oh, huh.
I texted it out and one of my friends was like, I tried to get it, but you have to win it. And I'm like, so these things, not only you can't just get them. Anyway.
there were a lot of write-ups about this pink candy flavored mac and cheese. the one that Jaya Saxena wrote for Eater included the line,
Kraft, in an explanation for its crimes, says, love makes people do strange things. Which, no, love makes people listen to their partner's podcasts. And I felt very seen and kind of personally attacked by that. So thank you, Jaya.
Yes. Thank you. That does crack me up when I hear my friends kind of complaining about this sort of thing. And I'm like silent in the background. Uh-huh. Yeah. I love an explanation for its crimes. That's great, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very well-written diss piece overall.
Diss track in the food world. A lot of them coming up. Wow. Well, geez, I feel like we've uncovered so many more things to say about macaroni and cheese, but alas, we have to stop at some point.
We do. You know, maybe we can do a sequel involving all these side quests.
The mac and cheesening. Yes. Yes.
Yes. So that is what we have to say about mac and cheese for today.
Yes, but we do have some listener mail for you. But first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express Card. And we are what you might call food explorers. We are so lucky that a part of our job involves traveling and trying a lot of the food where we go to travel and then coming back here and telling all of you good listeners about it. And through that, we have discovered some amazing dishes.
Sure, yes. Like, I had never understood what poke really could be, and it is delightful.
It is stunningly good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which we had a lot of on our trip to Hawaii. Another thing from their passion fruit, I now look for in literally every menu that I read. I'm like, yep, that one has passion fruit. Going for it.
And then all of the moles, and especially the green mole that you heard us talk about recently that we had
from
in Las Vegas.
In Vegas, yeah. Oh, or just steak basements.
Who doesn't love a steak basement?
Exactly. Well, if you are like us and you're willing to travel to seek out new foods to try, you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. It's for people who, like us, are in search of the next food adventure. If you travel, you know. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Cheesy 90s. I don't know. I should have. I wish I'd listened to Cheezosaurus Rex, his hit song, before I attempted this. But
I feel like you captured the emotion anyway.
Thank you. It was beautiful work of art. It were finger guns.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Samantha wrote, I just listened to your Campbell's Soup episode, and I have a personal connection to this particular topic I had to share. A couple years ago, I was on a few dating apps. If you haven't used them before, they're a mess. Read absolute show. So to make the process a little more bearable, I jotted down some of the gems I came across in bios and messages that were sent to me. I would commiserate with my best friend, and it would make us laugh. Two of the most memorable things that guys opened with were as follows. What's your favorite kind of soup? From Adam, 24. And damn, you're really cute, definitely an eye catcher. Next message, like Campbell's, good. From Mark, 29. And these are their ages, not their, their names.
Not their, like, screen names or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Luckily, between messages like that and the constant bombardment of quotes from The Office, I found my person. A portion of his bio was defending his love of zebra print, and I thought he seemed almost obnoxiously honest. We're celebrating our 2-year anniversary in a few days.
Oh, that's fascinating, and I'm glad you got out.
Yes. Congratulations. That's such a great story. But yeah, I have to say, I've gotten a lot of bad pickup lines in my day, but I don't think I've ever gotten a soup-based pickup line.
I'm really trying to think, and I also don't think I have.
I would love to know how common they are. I mean, is this a thing?
Right?
People write in, let us know about your soup-based pickup lines.
Yeah, I wonder if OkCupid is still, like, really farming, if they, A, still exist, and B, if they're still farming all of their users' data and, like, really using it for, like, kind of, like, social experiments still.
Oh.
Because they had some reports on, like, the way people would interact with each other that were fascinating.
Yeah.
Made me feel real weird about having ever been on that website. But I feel like if anyone could tell us, it's someone like them, how many soup related pickup lines there are in the world.
I need to know.
Mm-hmm. Unrelated. Brian wrote, your story of having dinner with the Disney princesses also reminded me of my own Disney related story. In 2012, my family went on a trip to Paris, and while we were there, we stopped at Euro Disney. We had a week of delicious food, but the food in your Disney was overpriced. I'm in a wheelchair, so me and my sister tried to do all the excess full rights. Because I was in a wheelchair, we cut short lines. There was one event we lined up for, though we weren't really sure what it was. We gradually saw a long line of little girls and realized it was the line to see a Disney princess. It was extremely embarrassing, and I quickly took a picture with the princess and got out of there. The event is now known as the Princess Incident.
The Princess Incident is a good name. I hope you got the picture, you know? I love looking back at the pictures of our evening.
They're very fascinating. It was fascinating is a great word for it.
Yes, because I was like in my running gear next Ariel.
Like holding up a fork, like it's a dangle hopper. Like,
That was our princess incident.
Yeah. Oh, it's been bugging me that I forgot to mention during this Disney Cinderella's Castle story, I forgot to mention one of my favorite really surreal parts was that during the dinner, the way that they would announce that more princesses were coming to the floor to circulate and meet you was that they would ring a giant gong. So this like gong would ring and princesses would appear, like more and more princesses. And it was so strange.
It was. And we didn't know how many were coming.
Yeah.
And we didn't realize that, I guess, there's this expectation that you'll get the picture. So we were kind of like, oh, we're good. And they were like, no.
They're like, no, I need you to take this picture with me.
Yes.
And we were like, okay, Jasmine. Like that.
Which we eventually warmed up to, but at first we were just very like, oh, it's all right.
Yeah, like, we're chill. And they were like, no, we're here to make sure. And I think one of the wait staff stopped by our table to like make sure that we were like doing okay. They were like, hey, we hear from our princesses that you're like not too into the photos. Like, are you having a bad time? We want you to have a good time.
Like, to the dungeon at Cinderella's castle.
Right. I'll take the photos.
You, it says. We could have never been seen again. That was a good time.
It was. No, it really was. It was magical. I promise.
No one forcing us to say that.
No.
Thanks so much to both of those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All three, our handle is SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express Card. And we here on Saver are what you might call food explorers. It has been our actual job to go to cool places and eat like a lot of the food there.
And then talk about it.
And then talk about it into these microphones, which is a crazy dream job.
Yes.
Well, if you're like us and willing to travel to seek out new foods to try, you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. It's for people like us who are in search of the next food adventure. If you travel, you know. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
We are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.